Ryan leaned toward JB so his ear was near the armorer's mouth. The WAG's engine was so loud, especially inside the Wagpool barn, that it was the only way they could communicate. JB gunned the accelerator and listened to the engine rev.
Doesn't run too bad, but I can't be sure how much power the fuel mixture will give it.
Faster than walking speed?
That shouldn't be a problem, but we're not going to outrun anything, especially another WAG. Maybe not even a man on foot.
Ryan considered the problem.
Keep it running! I'll be right back!
Ryan hurried over to the corner of the barn where the rest of the fuel cans remained. He picked up two of the heaviest and ran toward the school bus. Once there, he uncapped one of the cans and splashed the fuel all over the bus's tires, as well as the engine compartment. He did the same to the rest of the WAGs in the barn, using less and less fuel on each one, so he would have some fuel left over for the barn itself.
Open the barn door, Eliander!
The woman ran to the large sliding door that measured 20 by 10 feet and slid back and forth on a rusty cast-iron rail. She unlocked the latch that kept the heavy wooden door closed, then pushed against it using the handle on the latch. The door barely budged at first, but after a few moments it began to slide to the right, allowing a blade of sunlight to cut into the interior of the barn, lighting it up as bright as day. When the door was open wide enough for JB to drive the WAG through, Ryan tossed the fuel can aside and searched his pockets for a piece of flint. He had a shard of the stone in one of his pants pockets and rubbed it clean of lint with his fingers. Then he found a patch of dry stonework foundation at the base of the barn and began drawing the flint across it. He rubbed the stone slowly at first to see if it would spark the flint, and when it did, he repositioned himself and began striking the concrete more deliberately, trying to aim a spark at the soaked wood that sided the barn. It took five tries before a trio of sparks landed against the wet wood, glowing red for a moment, then erupting into a bright orange flame that wasted no time in climbing up the side of the barn and fanning out in all directions.
That's it! We're out of here!
JB tried the WAG's horn, and to his surprise, it gave a decent blast, hopefully warning the friends outside that they were on the move. Ryan caught up to JB just before he exited the barn and climbed up inside the heavy steel box, where he found Eliander trying to hold the four fuel cans in place with her body. The WAG rumbled out of the barn to where all the friends were waiting. JB brought the WAG to a stop. Ryan reached down and pulled Christy into the box, still wearing the clothes of the dead sec man. Next came Mildred. Doc sized up the WAG.
This is rather impressive. It should get us out of here rather nicely.
Shut it, Doc, and climb aboard!
I must insist you take young Jack next. I fear he's looking a little more pale than usual.
Mildred glanced at Eliander and then leaned over the edge of the box.
You all right, Jack?
Doc first. Age before beauty.
Without another word, Ryan, Mildred, and Christy pulled Doc into the box. Then the four of them reached down and helped Jack up and over the steel sides. Mildred held on to Jack's hand until he was seated in the box and leaning comfortably against one of its sides. Jack's skin felt clammy and a little bit hot.
He's burning up!
Eliander put a hand on Jack's forehead.
Well, I dare say he has every right to. That barn is rapidly turning into Dante's Inferno, and the last man out would certainly feel the heat. I know I am feeling rather tepid myself.
No, I mean he's running a fever!
From his wound? Is he infected?
Eliander looked at Mildred and shook her head. Mildred sighed, then turned to Ryan.
He's not infected and he's not sick.
What then?
He needs a fix.
A fix?
I'll explain later.
JB pulled the WAG onto the streets of the ville. The flames had reached the top of the building, and black smoke began to billow out of the seams in the steel roof. A few people were running inside the barn, carrying buckets of water.
Which way to the gate?
Ryan turned to Eliander.
Give him directions.
Eliander nodded and climbed to the front of the box, then lifted herself over the left side of it so she could give JB instructions.
Turn left here!
JB nodded, released the WAG's clutch, and the huge vehicle lurched forward. In the back of the steel box, Ryan watched over Jack, who looked to be in even worse shape than he'd been a few minutes earlier.
What's going to happen to him?
Can't be sure since I don't know what sort of drug they gave him, but if it's any kind of narcotic, he'll be screaming like a madman in no time. And if he's like any of those attic muties we came across before, he'll want to slash our throats first chance he gets.
Will it pass?
I don't know.
Ryan turned to Eliander.
Do you know?
He couldn't have had much of the drug, so if he makes it through the need for a fix, he'll probably be back to normal in a day or so.
What do you mean, if he makes it?
If they gave him a pure dose, then going without another fix might kill him. But if it was diluted, he should make it, although it won't be pretty to watch.
The WAG slowed. Eleander and the others peered over the sides of the box and saw that they'd come to a crossroad.
Turn right, JB!
Slowly, the wag started to move again.
What do we need to do?
Tie him up and make sure he can't get a hand on anyone. He's going to be strong and determined, so don't take any chances on the way you secure him.
Ryan nodded.
Mildred, Doc, give me the sick man's clothes.
The pair slipped out of the vest and jacket that had once belonged to the sec man guarding the Wagpool barn. Holstering his Sig Sauer, Ryan took his Panga from its sheath and began cutting the clothing in strips. When he was done, Ryan looked at Jack. The albino teen's eyes were glassy and half rolled up to the sky. His breathing was coming in short bursts, and his skin was damp with sweat.
You understand what's going on, Jack?
The youth barely moved his head in a nod. Doc put a hand on Jack's arm.
If anyone has the strength and resolve to make it through such an ordeal, I know you are the one, Master Laura.
Jack reached out, put a hand over Doc's mouth, then grabbed a strip of cloth from Ryan's hand and draped it over his own wrist.
Right. Cut the chatter, Doc, and let's get him tied up.
The friends set to work. The search party had reached the third floor, but there were no signs of the Outlanders anywhere. After letting his sec men cover the basement and first floor, Baron Robards decided to check the second and third floors himself, thinking that his men had to have missed something in their search. But there was no evidence anywhere that the Outlanders had gone through the building. Not a footprint, not a broken door or window, not even a body. And the farther they went up the building, the more danger there was of the sec men looting the Baron's quarters. There were all kinds of valuables laying about in there, from music boxes to weapons, books to new boots. There were piles of Jack, gold and silver, even stockpiles of Jolt and Dream. If he let the sec men wander through here on their own, none of them would be able to resist the temptation of pocketing a few items for themselves. Normally, Robards wouldn't mind. He himself had stolen from Baron Demand in the past. But now they wouldn't be stealing from Demand, they'd be stealing from him. But how could he call off the search without his sec force questioning his motives? The answer came from the Outlanders themselves, as someone shouted from the other end of the building.
Wagpool's on fire!
Robards ran down the hall to the north stairwell and looked through one of the smashed-up windows. The Wagpool was on fire and couldn't be saved, but he could see that several people had managed to move out a few wags from inside the burning building. The wags were smoldering now, but hopefully a couple of them had been gotten out early enough to be saved.
Let's get over there. That's where the Outlanders are.
The sec men headed down the stairs. Baroness Lashini lingered at the window, watching the big barn go up in flames. She'd been wondering how she might send a proper signal to her sec force, lying in wait outside of the ville. They'd brought a flare gun with them, but that might not be enough, depending on how far her force was from the ville. Now she didn't have to do a thing. The plume of black smoke rose 100 feet or more over the ville and would be visible for miles around, catching the attention of her sec force and anyone else who might be in the area. The Baroness smiled. It was all unfolding for her much more easily than she had a right to expect. But she wasn't complaining. She was quite happy to let the Outlanders take care of the Ville's sec force for her. And if they got away, well, the life of her son would be a small price to pay for a Ville that made more Jack in a year than she'd done in the last 10. And all she had to do was watch it unfold. JB slowed for instructions. They had been close to the wall several times, and a few spots looked weak enough to break through with the giant wag. There was no telling how far they'd get once they'd smashed down a wall of hulking steel wrecks.
Straight down this road. Once you pass the Baron's residence, the gate is at the end of the road that forks to the left.
JB nodded and got the wag moving again.
I want everyone to keep low. The Baron's residence is 3 stories tall, and there may be sec men on the roof with a clear shot into the box.
Mildred nodded in Jack's direction.
We've got to leave him there. It's too risky to move him now.
The friends looked at Jack, his chest heaving as he struggled against the demons the drug had unleashed inside his body.
Not worry for me. Get out of here. It'll be fine.
Ryan turned away from the youth without another word. Then he picked up the scattergun that had belonged to the sec man. Christy scooped up shells for the gun that were rolling around the bottom of the box and handed them to Ryan.
Going somewhere, lover?
JB needs some cover.
I believe the term is riding shotgun, is it not?
Something like that.
Ryan peeked over the top of the box. The Baron's mansion was still a block away, and the street still looked fairly clear. If Ryan was going to get by JB's side, now was the time to do it. Shouldering the scattergun and the rest of his weapons, Ryan climbed onto the heavy metal plate that extended forward from the box to protect the driver inside the cab. He moved to the right edge of the plate, then lay on his stomach so that his feet hung over the edge, and then down next to the passenger side door. JB kept the wag running steadily, allowing Ryan the chance to find the open window with his boots, then grab hold of the bars holding the rearview mirror in place, and then finally slip into the cab through the window.
Just dropping in?
JB had his Uzi on the seat next to him, but Ryan knew he was running short on ammo.
Thought you'd need some help.
You thought right.
Any sign of Sekhmet on the roofs?
Not on the roof, on the road.
Ryan looked down the road and saw a dozen or more Sekhmen spilling out of the Baron's residence and onto the street.
You think you could turn around?
Nope, street's too narrow, wag's too big.
We'll have to go through then.
JB said nothing. Instead, he pushed harder on the wag's accelerator. The giant vehicle slowly picked up speed. Baron Robarts ran out into the street, only to stop in his tracks. Just up the road, the Ville's best construction wag was rumbling down on him, smoke billowing out of the exhaust stack and two men inside the cab. Outlanders. Not only had they torched the wag pool, they'd stolen one of the Ville's most valuable vehicles. Any thought of letting the bastards go vanished from Robarts' mind. If he let them, they would destroy the Ville and leave it a smoldering wreck. He'd become Baron, but it would mean nothing if he had to lord over a ruin and contend with angry Ville residents who would look to him to lead them back onto the path of prosperity. The Outlanders had to be stopped.
Take cover and take aim! Chill the Outlanders, but save the wag!
Finding parts for the vehicle would be tough enough, but if any of the wag's tires were blown out in the fight, they would be almost impossible to replace. The Sekhmen scattered, taking up positions behind buildings, and the scattered chunks of concrete and steel that littered the sides of the street.
Hold your fire until you can see the bastards behind the wheel!
The giant wag picked up speed. From his scouting point, Sekhmen Roy glanced in the direction of the Ville and saw the plume of black smoke beginning to rise up over the center of it. He tapped Sherman on the arm.
See that? You think that's the signal?
I don't know, numbnuts. What do you think?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
Yes, it's the signal.
So, what now?
We let the Sec Chief know that it's time to move in.
By the time Sherman and Roy found Sec Chief Viviani and the rest of Baroness Lashini's Sec Force, they were already packed up and in their wags, waiting for the two men to return from their forward area recon.
Baroness sent the signal, Chief.
You mean that huge column of black smoke rising up from inside the Ville?
Sherman turned around. Although this position was several miles away, the smoke could still clearly be seen.
That's the one.
The Sec Chief looked disgusted.
Take your position. We're rolling in 5 minutes.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.
Graphic Audio is a movie in your mind. But Graphic Audio is playing in folks' minds all over North America. Right now, people like you are experiencing the power of Graphic Audio. For them, it's a totally new way to see an audiobook. Here's what they're saying. This was posted by Rayboy.
Man, is this one sweet. It's almost like having Jurassic Park in your head.
And here's something from Cerberus Man.
The Tigers of Heaven was very exciting. It was almost like listening to a movie. I'll be buying the other Outlanders series.
This is an email we got from Mark.
The sex scenes, they're depicted pretty effectively.
And here's an email from Chris Rutledge.
I have been a big fan of the Deathlands series for many years. I was delighted to find a multi-person cast and sound effects in the books. You do great work. Keep it up.
Got a comment you'd like to make about Graphic Audio? Got suggestions? Criticisms? Give us a call at 1-800-670-5220 or email us at support@cuttingaudio.com. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the container of this Graphic Audio book. We'd like to hear from you, wherever you are. Due to intense violence and sexual situations, Graphic Audio is rated for mature audiences.